From Buck's studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here again with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for the good doc, the number to call is 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about, Zorba.
Right. We're going to talk about drinking, moderate drinking. Where does alcohol fit into a good lifestyle, or is it really good for your heart or bad for your heart? And let me tell you something. There's controversy involving alcohol. And then the other thing we're going to talk about is aspirin, where we go back and forth on who should take aspirin, who shouldn't take aspirin. So these are interesting controversial topics. We'll talk about that.
Yeah, looking forward to it. What's our recipe?
Chicken. You like chicken, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Avocado. Do you like avocado?
Yeah.
How about caprese? Do you know what caprese means?
No, I have no idea.
I have no idea either. But we've got, I know what the salad is. It's chicken avocado caprese salad. And I know if you do caprese and it's French, it has a little squiggle on like the R or something like that. Anyway, I know how to make the salad. It's a great recipe, folks. Listen up.
And we know what the phones are, and we're going to them right now. 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us now, Zorba, a listener in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hello. How are you guys doing?
Fine. How can we help?
I just had a quick question about my fiancé. Whenever he works out, especially when he's doing some sort of high-intensity interval training, it seems that his heart rate gets up really high, and then when he stops, he feels like he's going to pass out, and sometimes he actually, you know, does pass out. So what he started doing is kind of trying to cool down, like doing jumping jacks in between the intervals that he does. And I was just wondering whether that's concerning or something we should get looked at.
Right, right. So how old is he?
He is 27.
Okay, 27. Any history of heart disease or anything like that?
No, nothing like that.
Okay, so nothing like that. So what does he do for a living besides exercise? I know exercise, he doesn't do it for a living. What's he do for a living?
He's a lawyer.
Well, there's no heavy lifting. I mean, physical lifting when you're a lawyer. They do have a lifting when it comes to some of the other stuff. Okay, so he exercises, gets his heart rate up, and then a little bit more detail. What is actually happening?
So he has a watch that monitors his heart rate.
Okay.
And when he does, he does a little Tabata workout. So he'll do 50 seconds of high-intensity workout followed by 10 seconds of, relax, and then 50 seconds on, 10
got
seconds
you.
Off.
Got you. Okay, so when he's got this, when he's got this feeling, when does it occur within his workout? When does it actually happen?
So it actually happens after he's done. Mm-hmm. So the 10 seconds are totally fine, and after he's done, that's when he feels like he's going to pass out.
So, and that, how long does that last for?
I would say about 5 minutes, three minutes at the Yeah, quite a long time.
Okay, so I've got some suggestions. First of all, he should see somebody. That's number one, because you don't really expect to pass out and see whether or not there's something going on there. I think he should see somebody. And something else, and recently I read some interesting article of something called IHSS, idiopathic hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. And this is where the muscle of the heart kind of overgrows. And it turns out it's much more common than we ever thought, because when we've been doing echoes and we found that it's really a common thing. And this is something where you can have very minimal symptoms such as he has. Now, it doesn't mean he has it by any means, but an echocardiogram is going to look at his heart and look at what it actually looks like structurally. Because you really don't expect somebody to pass out after they've done exercise. And if they feel a little bit weak afterwards, like, oh my God, I feel like I'm going to pass out. If it goes away in 10 seconds, 15 seconds, that may be kind of like your body is readjusting. But 3 to 5 minutes, it's kind of a little bit more. So I think he really ought to have it something that he looks at, you know, that he gets looked at. And if he came into my office and I were to look at him, you know, I might examine him. And I most likely would order an echocardiogram just to look at the structure of his heart to rule out that there's anything structurally going on that is significant. And then if I looked at that and I said that was fine, but I still wanted to continue to do something, I'd probably put him on a treadmill and see what his recovery looked like. That's what I would do. So I think it was a good call. I can't answer it on the radio, but I hope I have steered you in the right direction.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
We appreciate that call at 800-462-7413. Before our next call, Zorba, does moderate drinking protect your heart?
Well, it's a big issue. And I mean, we go back and forth. I mean, it really. So we go back and forth because there's some studies that show having one drink a day for a woman, two drinks a day for a man is really safe. And there's some studies that show that having a drink a day actually is good for your heart. It's actually good. But once you have over two drinks a day, it's not good for your heart. Now, it's interesting because there have been a couple of studies looking at atrial fibrillation, which is a heart irregular beat that, by the way, can be associated with stroke. And in some of those studies, it seemed to show that having a drink a day increased the risk that you would actually have atrial fibrillation. And they looked in, there was an article, a study recently in Australia, 140 people, 150 people with atrial fibrillation. They looked at the Aussies who were drinking. They had an average of 17 drinks a week. Mm-hmm. Okay, so mm-hmm. they're drinking more, you know, obviously more than a drink a day, which would be seven or two drinks a day. And they were asked, 70 of them were asked to abstain. It was interesting when they looked at the article. Would you possibly abstain from drinking? You've got to ask. You're smiling.
Is there some money involved?
Is there some money involved? They quote, managed to reduce their consumption. Managed to reduce their consumption. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I'll work on reducing my consumption from four drinks a day to two drinks a day. And anyway, over a six-month period, those who actually succeeded in reducing their consumption had a lower incidence of atrial fibrillation. There may be some other things going on here. Anyway. The bottom line of recent research in an article published in JAMA Open Network is that it's a little bit unclear whether or not moderate drinkers have less heart disease because they have a different lifestyle. In other words, I have a glass of wine. I would say probably four or five nights a week, not every night. And when I say a glass of wine, it really is a small glass of wine. I don't have very much at all. Well, is the wine protecting me? Or do I have less heart attacks because I do other things that are healthy? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if I sat there and I had two beers every night, is it the two beers or three beers are bad for me? Or is it because if I'm having three beers, I'm eating frozen pizza and brats? That has yet to be figured out. Mm. So then there's the cultural issue. There's what I call the puritanical issue. Anything that feels good for you must be bad for you, right? That's what the Puritans said. Sex in marriage is okay. Sex outside of marriage must be bad for you. No. May feel good, but it must be bad for you. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to drinking, drinking really can't be good for you. We Puritans say it can't be good for you, although they often had a glass of rum in breakfast in the morning. So there are other cultural issues there. So when I look at all this data together, I think the jury is out on how protective a glass of wine or a can of beer or, frankly, a mixed drink mm-hmm. is for you every day. But when I read all the information together, I'm going to continue having my glass of wine every day or 5 days a week. And I'm not going to read the other studies because they're just confusing me. That's the best way. Ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is bliss.
That's the reason, folks, that we have Dr. Zorba Pastor.
That's right. We're trying to promote ignorance. If you don't want it, if you don't want to follow a study, just don't read it, and it makes life easier. I think we're going to get some pushback from some of our listeners on that.
800-462-7413. That's 800-462-7413. We have a stored call now, Zorba, a listener in El Paso, Texas. Got it. I'll do it. 800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, a voicemail from Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Does taking medication to help you sleep affect your sleep or your memories or the learning that you get when you sleep? That's my question. Thank you.
It's a good question. Depends on the medication, by the way. So if you're taking an over-the-counter medication to sleep, which is usually an antihistamine, certainly doesn't affect your memory very much. It's not going to do much to you unless you're older. Like if you're 75 years old and you're taking an antihistamine, it may actually dull your memory the next day because it may change your sleep. And there's something called the Beers criteria, which sort of looks at drugs that may affect older people in an adverse way. It makes you dizzy, may make you a little tired. So at 65 or 75 or 85, that drug may affect you, but it doesn't affect you at the age of 25. And that's over the sleeping pills, which inevitably, if they don't have melatonin, they usually have an antihistamine, the side effect of sleepiness. Now, what about prescription drugs? Well, let's look at Ambien, a very common prescription drug. That can affect your memory. You can engage in nocturnal eating. I had a patient of mine, and they took Ambien, and the husband came downstairs, heard some rattling in the kitchen, and it was like 1:30 in the morning. Couldn't figure out what it was. Came downstairs, didn't have a gun in his hand, luckily. Turned out his wife was making eggs, and she was kind of out of it. What are you doing? I'm just making eggs. I thought I'd have breakfast. It's 1:30 in the morning, honey. She engaged in Ambien sleepwalking behavior. So there's some drugs that can do it. There's some drugs that can't. You want to look at it. Now, melatonin, which is not a very strong over-the-counter medication, is safe throughout the lifestyle. If you're older than the age of 65, and you're going to take anything, either over-the-counter or not, give a call to your healthcare professional or send them a note and say, is this safe for me, especially if you're concerned about it. Most of these drugs, though, they don't affect your memory permanently. They just may affect your memory on that day, or they might have a hangover. So I occasionally will take Benadryl to go to sleep if I'm really tired or I'm in the mountains, and it actually affects me when I wake up in the morning for about 3 or 4 hours. I have a hangover from it. And I don't feel I'm quite as energetic. My word finding difficulties are sort of there. So I tend not to use it unless I'm not doing something the next day. You know, I never do it the night before I do a radio show because, Tom, I know if I look at you and I'm not really up to date and I'm not on there, you're going to notice it right away, right?
You're always up to always date. But tell me this. You say ask the age. Yeah. What's the difference if the person says 65, 75, or 85?
Well, that is a good question. A 65-year-old and an 85-year-old, that's a good thing. Well, you can be 80, you can be 65 and have the body and the brain of an 85-year-old because you smoke cigarettes, drank alcohol, you know what I mean? So the drug is going to have diabetes. So the drug may affect you more at 65 than at 85. So you bring up an important point. There are other variables here that count too. On the whole, the older that you get, the more the side effects of the drugs are going to be there because your body does not metabolize them the same way. But the other variable is whether or not you have pre-existing conditions and how healthy you are and what you're doing. Now, when it comes to like 105, you know, that's the oldest patient I ever had was just 5 days short of 106.
Whoa.
And he was still driving, passed his driving test, and had a girlfriend because his wife had died 30 years before. He was, 105 or, almost 106. And his girlfriend was a youngin'. She was 87.
Pretty good. Before we take a break now, Zorba,
he was quite a guy too. He was I'm just going to finish with him.
Yeah, no,
he was a curmudgeon. So his family wanted to take his keys away from him. They said, we don't want him to drive. I said, why? He lost his keys. And I said, well, that's not a good enough reason.
You can lose your keys if you're 25.
I don't know. Whatever it was. I said, let's have a family discussion about this. So we got together, had a family discussion in the office. And they said, well, we don't think he's a good driver. He said, well, I'll take a driving test. He agreed. So went to take the driving test. He was quite hard of hearing, and they flunked him. And so he said, the guy who tested me didn't like me because I was old, and he had an accent, and I couldn't hear him. So he called back, and he yelled at the Department of Transportation. They said, you should not take away my license to do it. They came out to his house, and they tested him, and they passed him. You know, they did a personal test. But then they passed him for two things. No nighttime driving. Well, that made sense. He said, I'm not going to drive it. Yeah. But he could only go 20 miles from his house. Okay, only 20 miles. His girlfriend lived 25 miles away. I said, you know what? Where'd this 20 miles come from? You go visit your girlfriend, and if you get a ticket, we'll deal with it. Anyway, he died before he got a ticket, but he kept on visiting his girlfriend.
Good story. 800-462-7413 is our number if you have a question for Zorba. Before we take a break now, Zorba, let's check in again with your favorite Eager Beavers, the Grammar Police. Actually, Zorba, this email came to us from a very seldom heard from division of the Grammar Police. This one is from the Blood Police.
The Blood Police?
And Zorba, we're not sure if this officer's rank is within the Blood Police, but let's assume he's a captain. So we're going to call him Captain Hemo. Okay. The following email came to us from a listener, Jim, in New Glarus, Wisconsin, who writes, I'm a retired CNA and surgical assistant. As you are a healthcare professional, especially one who communicates with the public, I cringe at your use of the term blood thinners for anticoagulants. As you well know, these do not thin the blood, even though they can keep the blood from thickening with coagulation. The blood does not get more watery or thinner when one uses anticoagulants. Please, please stop using this misleading term. I'm in favor of always using correct terms.
You know, it's funny, but he brings up a really good point. We say blood thinners, and people know what they are. If I said anticoagulant, I would lose a lot of the audience. Now, I don't mean the public radio audience. Come on. I mean, they're all anticoagulant. But the reality is a lot of people say, well, what's an anticoagulant? Because the common term is blood thinner. But it's like the common term heart attack is not the same as myocardial infarction, which is really the correct term. So I like to use common terms that people use because I'm more likely to communicate the correct way. He is actually correct in a pedantic way. And God bless him. God bless him. God love him for doing it. So he is correct. But I'm going to continue to use the word blood thinner. And occasionally, giving respect, because it is true, I will say blood thinners, you know, also known as anticoagulants. So I'm going to alter what I'm doing a little bit, but I'm going to still use the common term.
Did something Zorba said on the show make your blood boil? Let us know. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, more of your emails, and we'll be cooking up a healthy chicken avocado caprese salad, all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number, if you have a question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, we put together chicken avocado caprese salad.
What do you mean, we put together? I mean, where's the we in this salad? I mean, other than going to, your stellar kitchen. Actually, your kitchen is really quite nice because Monica does a lot of cooking. She gets a lot of good
food.
She's
very good.
She's very good cook. She gets a lot of really good stuff out of that kitchen.
She, by the way, is coming up with the right kind of recipe for you and Penny, and having you come over.
Oh, I think that sounds great.
And
that
even if you hate it, you've got to say this is the best I've ever had.
I know how to say, wow, this is delicious.
Okay.
With a wink in my eye.
All right. Okay. Chicken avocado caprese salad.
That's right. If you love chicken, I love chicken. You like avocado. I have no idea what the word. What does the word caprese mean?
No idea.
Carl, do you know what the word caprese means?
Yeah, aren't those capris? Aren't those short pants?
Capris? Oh my! You know something? You are always
short pants salad.
Short chicken avocado short pants salad.
Yeah, you can make this salad when there's a flood.
All right, enough on the word.
Yeah,
enough on the word. Start out with a quarter cup. And by the way, if you listeners out there know the derivation in the word caprese, send it in to us. We'd like to know.
Yeah,
quarter cup of balsamic vinegar.
Quarter cup balsamic vinegar.
And it's got to be balsamic vinegar, which has a different taste. Mm-hmm. 2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
2 big tea extra virgin olive oil.
2 teaspoons of brown sugar. It can either be light brown sugar or dark brown sugar, one of those.
Yeah, 2 little tea brown sugar.
By the way, how do you keep your brown sugar from solidifying in your house?
I say to Monica, keep it from solidifying. That's how I do it.
If it's long enough, it becomes hard as a rock. Have you ever noticed that with brown sugar? Yeah, clumpy. 1 teaspoon minced garlic.
Little tea minced garlic.
1 teaspoon of basil, dried basil.
A little tea, dried basil.
1 teaspoon of salt.
A little tea, salt.
That is the marinade. Now, let's go for the salad. 4 chicken thigh fillets. So boneless, skinless chicken thighs. So no bones. No bones about it, no skin, chicken thighs.
Yep. 4 chicken thigh fillets.
And they're much more flavorful. And they've become much more common over the last few years, just like, boneless, skinless chicken breast, which is really dry. 5 cups of romaine salad leaves, washed and dried. Got to dry them. Very important.
5 cups romaine salad leaves, washed and dried.
An avocado that you're going to slice, little slices.
1 avocado sliced.
1 cup of cherry tomatoes, grape tomatoes, little tomatoes. 1/2 cup of fresh mini mozzarella cheese balls. 1/4 cup of fresh basil leaves thinly sliced.
1/4 cup basil leaves thinly sliced.
And salt and pepper.
S&P.
Okay. So first of all, you're going to make the marinade. You're going to whisk the marinade together. So you're going to whisk together the balsamic vinegar, olive oil, brown sugar, minced garlic, dried basil, and salt. And then you're going to put the chicken in a shallow dish. Pour 4 tablespoons of marinade into the chicken. Stir it around to evenly coat it. And you're going to reserve the rest of it out there. And by the way, another way, not just a dish, if you put this often in a Ziploc bag and you put the marinade all over, sometimes that really works even better than a dish. But marinade, you gotta leave it there. Probably 30 minutes, an hour would be plenty of time. And remember, you got to put it in the refrigerator. You don't want that chicken sitting on the counter. So then heat 1 teaspoon of olive oil in a large grill pan or a skillet over medium-high heat. Sear the chicken fillets on each side until golden and crispy and cook through. So that's going to take probably about 5, 6, 7 minutes. Once the chicken is cooked, set it aside to rest. Then slice the chicken into strips. Okay, prepare the salad with lettuce, avocado slices, tomato, mozzarella, cheese, and put the chicken on there and then top it with basil strips, then drizzle with the remaining dressing, a little salt and pepper, and that's really good. And, if you want to get this recipe and you don't write it down, where do you think it is, Tom? What would your guess be? Go ahead.
No idea.
No idea, that's right. How about the World Wide Web? They could actually come to the World Wide Web. ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org. Or, of course, through Facebook.
Is this even worth going to the web? I mean,
is it even worth going to the web? Obviously, this is not a Tom Clark recipe. We're not doing burgers on the bun. Is it even worth going to the web? That's right. That's right. Yes, for those who like chicken and avocado, and for those who know what caprese actually means, it is worth going to the web.
Back to the phones now, Zorba, a listener with us in Green Lake, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. Well, thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. My husband and I enjoy your show very much, all of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
My situation is a little bit unusual. I have some black eyes that have not recovered from a fall, which happened 5 months ago. I am 81 years old and in good health. Mm-hmm. And 5 months ago, on December 6th, I had a fall just coming out of a building in downtown Green Lake. I was not paying attention like one is supposed to do, and I fell face down on the concrete and hit my forehead and was pretty badly banged up. Mm. They took me to the emergency room, and they did an MRI and determined I did not have a concussion. Mm-hmm. I didn't pass out, anything like that. So I stayed a few hours in the emergency until I was stabilized, and I came home. Mm-hmm. So what I have done is, you know, ice packs at the beginning, which helped to some extent. And then later on, I got one of those masks that you can heat in the microwave and put that on my eyes, and then I tried massaging my cheeks and so forth. But basically, after 5 months, I still have blotches on both of my cheeks.
After 5 months, you still have lots of discoloration in your cheeks?
Yeah, kind of blotches in the middle of each of my cheeks, and it's not the super dark color that you get right away after, but it's like a medium brown and... You know, I am old, I know that, and it takes time for these things to resolve.
It does, that's right. And your skin is thinner when we're older. You know, so when we're younger, it resolves quicker, obviously, because we're younger. But we also have thicker skin. And what happens as we get older, we lose subcutaneous fat. Our skin wrinkles because we lose the elasticity of the skin. Subcutaneous fat that actually goes underneath the skin that puffs it up goes down, and it can take forever to get better. And then sometimes the blood that's in the skin can actually change the color of the skin for long, 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 long periods of time. So even though
like
this has been
long?
5 months, and
we
when we use the word long, when doctors use the word long, you know what they mean? Long. That's all they mean. I mean, you know, we don't guarantee our work. We're not like Midas Muffler Shop and other places. It's long. So this, unfortunately, is keeping with what happens when people have injuries. And as they get older, they'll say, gee, why is my skin still discolored? Why has this happened? It's been 4 or 5 months. It should get better. And the answer is, you're right, it should get better. But your body doesn't respond as much, and there still may be blood underneath the skin that actually produced this discoloration. What I want you to do, go to the store. I want you to get an eye drop, believe it or not, that will help too, called Refresh, R-E-F-R-E-S-H. See, Tom, I can spell.
Very good.
I can spell. I can spell Refresh. Or ask the pharmacist for the equivalent of Refresh eye drops. These are great eye drops. Then you go to the same place or go onto the web and you get a microwavable warm mask, eye mask. And these are masks that have little bubbles in them. They cost about $10, $15. You put them in the microwave to warm them up. That's what they are. They're microwave.
Yeah.
And then you put the mask in the microwave, warm it up. You put drops in your eyes, okay, drop in each eye, put the mask in the – well, you, this is the order you do it in. Heat up the mask. I have one. I heat it up for 30 seconds, 35 seconds. It really helps with my dry eyes. Then I put the timer on for 5 minutes. I go and sit down, put the drops in my eyes, put the mask on, and I sit there for 5 minutes and do that twice a day. And what you'll do is you'll increase the circulation to below your eyes because the heat increases the circulation. And that makes it more likely that this is going to heal and it'll speed up healing.
Okay. So in other words, get some refresh, just the regular refresh eye drops.
Right.
Yeah, I've had those before. Okay,
right.
But I've never done this combination.
But you've got to have the warm mask, the refresh. And the reason using refresh is while you're there, you might as well treat your dry eyes because you're an old person. And people right. 80, in their 80s have dry eyes. You get double bang. This has nothing whatsoever to do with discoloration in your cheeks. I just want you to get a twofer. So you're getting both things.
Why not? Absolutely.
But it will increase... It will increase the circulation, and that promotes healing. With heat promotes healing. So do it twice a day, and that may help. And then give us a call in a month and let us know what happens. Okay?
Okay.
And by the way, when you said you weren't paying attention, most of us don't pay attention. That's when we fall. And you fall because you weren't you weren't hiking, you weren't doing stuff. The major injuries that I had when I fractured my ankle was not when I was hiking in Tibet and Nepal in the Himalayas. It's when I was in a dog park in Berkeley and I had just come down a steep hill and my foot went one way. I was on the flats. It was embarrassing. You know, how'd you fracture your ankles? Was it in Nepal? No, it was in a dog park on the flats.
It's such a good lesson, though, for everybody, but seniors particularly, just to be mindful. My mind was on a gazillion other things that I had to do that day. The least of which was to walk to the car without falling.
There you go.
Yeah. So I learned a lesson.
Yes, you
else.
Did.
I will give this a try, and
let us know.
I appreciate so much your time.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You shouldn't say she's an old person.
In our society, you never call anyone old. How about when you're in your 80s? I mean, if you're not old in your 80s.
I would say that's not old yet. 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. We have a voicemail from Oklahoma.
I'm calling about my 3-year-old grandson. He is huge. We think he's going to be like Andre the Giant. He only eats bananas. He'll eat those little pizzas with pepperonis. We don't know what to do about his weight. His heart is fine. He does have a little sleep apnea. What can I do to get this boy, his weight down? Thank you, Zorba. I love you guys. Thank you.
What a nice call. And thanks, thanks for doing it.
Very nice.
So what would be the first step I would do? The first thing I would do is bring them to a registered dietitian, talk to their doctor. Get a referral to a registered dietitian. It's going to look at the food and begin to develop a plan of how this young person should eat. And you've got to begin to take control over what they're eating. So a lot of times they're drinking a lot of milk. I've had overweight kids who say, I'm drinking milk. Milk is good for me, right? And they're drinking like a half gallon of milk a day, which is a lot of milk and a lot of calories. So you've got to get a registered dietitian. That's what I would do in here. Find out what's going on and begin to develop a meal plan. The other issue is if you're only feeding, we'll say, bananas and other things, which are carbohydrates, you have to figure out a behavioral plan so that you and your child kind of buy into the same thing, to feed them. Because you can say what you want to, but you then have to go forth and actually get that food into the house, the good food. So registered dietitian, step one, that's where to start.
Before the break now, Zorba, let's crack open the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and take a listener email. The following question came from Nancy in Trout Capital of Minnesota, Preston. Nancy writes, "Hello, I love your show. I'm a 75-year-old retired psychologist who, about 5 months ago, had a plastic surgeon inject Botox into my compassion lines above my nose and eyebrows. The lines are not as deep or noticeable now, but I have a droopy left eye that does not match my other eye. The RN said, 'Oh, that sometimes happens. He can lift that for you.' But after having some fillers above my lips, I don't want any more fillers, as it was excruciating. My husband had to have his eyelids lifted to restore his peripheral vision, and he had black eyes for a month. So I want to avoid that if I can. She said the Botox would be gone in 12 to 18 months, and my eye will probably go back to normal then. Will it?
Well, first of all, it is from the Botox. I mean, Botox, you know, when you put Botox in, you're basically stopping, you know, you're affecting what's going on and how the muscle is actually working. So you're getting rid of all of the lines in your skin from the muscle that's actually producing those lines. But obviously, some of it seeped into the eyelid itself. And so part of the eyelid is droopy. I mean, it's a Botox result. So you've got a couple of options here. Number one, you got to wait until the Botox goes away. How long does that take? Well, they said it might take a year. So it often goes away in 6 months, but it could take up to a year. So you really don't want to do anything. And you don't want to have your eye have a filler in it while you're waiting for the Botox. Because all of it, all of a sudden you have something else putting in your eye. So the answer is, I would do nothing, wait for the Botox to go away. And you got to think about this if you decide to have another Botox injection, because your, quote, compassion lines are going to reappear when your eye pops up to the normal space.
Have a healthy living question for Zorba? He's happy to help. Just post it on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls coming up, another interesting topic to talk about, and more listener emails as well. All coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, new guidelines for taking preventative aspirin.
Right. For a long time, it was very simple. We said everybody ought to take an aspirin. That's what we do to prevent heart attacks. Mm-hmm. Then there was some data that showed really that primary prevention, in other words, if you're a normal, healthy person, aspirin really wasn't doing you any good. Well, then the question was, what about if you're not totally healthy? You've got high blood pressure, you've got diabetes, and so on. Mm-hmm. And so there's a group called the U.S. Public Service Task Force, and they're very conservative, and they're sort of finally catching up with some of the things the cardiology people have been saying, you know, the major new guidance that they're looking at. So let's talk about that. That's really important. So because this really is influential on how we physicians do things. So there's no longer a recommendation for aspirin to prevent a first heart attack or stroke among people 60 years of age or older. In other words, you don't do it unless you have a reason. Now, people 40 to 60, they say 40 to 59, but 40 to 59 may, should, possibly something like that, take aspirin if they are at high risk for cardiovascular disease. That's not really defined. Well, high risk, obviously, if you had a previous heart attack, that's at high risk. But high risk, I would say, if you have diabetes, but I'm not sure if it means you have hypertension. But anyway, 40 to 50, basically 40 to 59, people should take aspirin if they're at risk for heart disease. Over the age of 60, there is little benefit for taking aspirin, once again, in primary prevention, where primary prevention means just, you know, you haven't had a heart attack before. And then the recommendation is you don't want to continue aspirin beyond the age of 75 at all unless there is an overwhelming reason. So as you can see, it's kind of clear as mud, I mean, this is very hard to then give to the, put out to the general public. You know, we still don't understand. It should be here. It should be here. It should be here. It should be here. Mm-hmm. So what they're doing is they're weighing the side effects of aspirin against what aspirin is doing. The side effects being GI bleeds in your stomach. I mean, that's really... And a number of people get that. They get ulcers, they get GI bleeds, and they get sick from it. I think, to me, if I were to simplify it, I would say this. Talk to your doctor about whether or not you should take aspirin and say, I want to follow the guidelines. That's the way to look at it. The other way, if you want to look at it individually, is go to the U.S. Public Service Task Force. That's what it's called, mm-hmm. the U.S. Public Service Task Force. Plug in your age, plug in what there is, and make your own decision. Basically, it's still very useful for people who've previously had heart attacks. The real issue is primary prevention. You haven't had a heart attack. Who should take it and who should not take it? And once again, when I'm talking about it on the air, I'm only going to confuse people. Go to the website.
Yeah, but when you talk to your doctor, how does the doctor know what does what?
Well, we're supposed to know that. We're supposed to plug it in and say, "Hey, you have a, you know, you're between
sometimes the, if I'm 50, I yeah. should take or should,
well, if you're 40 to 59 and you're at high risk for heart disease, then you should take it. If you're 40 to 59 and you're not at any risk for heart disease, you shouldn't take it. Oh, the okay. issue is, what puts you at risk for heart disease? Diabetes, sure, puts you at risk. How about high blood pressure? Well, it does put you for risk, but I'm not sure how to identify that. And the fact is, the guidelines are still murky. One thing we know is we've told a lot of people to be on aspirin that don't need to be on it at all.
800-462-7413 is our number. That's 800-462-7413. And we go back to the phones now, Zorba, welcoming a listener in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, this is great. You know, I'm always looking for the perfect non-prescription orthotic, and I thought I'd found it. Mm-hmm. and not so much for plantar fasciitis on my foot, but sort of weak tendons and falling arches and stuff. And it was made out of silicone and very comfortable and seemed to do the job pretty well. Maybe I wore it too long, but it's not clearly not designed to let mm-hmm. the skin breathe. And mm-hmm. so I developed either kind of blisters or uh-huh. peeling or something. Mm-hmm. And so I took it off and didn't wear it for a while, and then the problem cleared up. So mm-hmm. I'm kind of thinking maybe I should just wear it intermittently.
Well, you've got a few options here. First of all, wearing it intermittently would be useful. Double socks sometimes will make a difference too. Oh. In other words, what you do is you have a very thin under sock, and then you put your regular sock on top of that. And that often reduces friction. It's very good. Very good for hiking in the mountains. When I was in the Himalayas, I double socked every day, hiked for a month, never got a blister. So that's an issue. Double socking reduces friction. So you could do that. Not using it every day can help, but if the plantar fasciitis, you know, tends to bother you, you may have to use it every day. How long did you use it before you got a new insert?
Did I use it before I got a new insert? Mm-hmm.
Are you using the same insert for like 5 years?
No. Well, let's see. I had mm-hmm. Just over the counter sure. product that I purchased, mm-hmm. which was designed differently, and I wore it on top of the sock rather than under the sock. And I was doing that for three years maybe. Right.
So you've got an option. First of all, they may wear out. I mean, think about it. Your whole body weight is on there. So part of it may be an insert issue where you really have to kind of get a new one every 6 months or every year. Part of it, you do use it outside the sock, but I would double sock because you want to use it outside the second sock, but it's the movement between the first sock and the second sock that stops the movement between your skin and the sock. Are you with me? In other words, that's where you reduce friction because the socks are going to push against one another, and so they're less likely to do friction in the skin because your skin is not going to push against the sock.
Where do I position the silicone?
I'm still outside the second sock.
Outside the second sock?
100%. Just what you're doing. The silicone position is there, but there will be two socks underneath it, the thin inner sock and then your regular sock on top of it.
Got it.
That does a lot for blisters. That does a lot for skin. It really does it. And then, of course, you know, you have to change your socks every day to make sure the moisture in there goes away.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. And those over-the-counter implants are wonderful. They're usually good. They take care of things at least 95% of the time, if not more.
Yeah. Well, I figure it's a cost-benefit. It works, you know.
Absolutely so. Well, thanks for your call.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah. 800-462-7413 is our number. That's 1-800-462-7413. And we have a voicemail now, Zorba, from Spokane, Washington.
Hi, Zorba. Interested in the new HIV med K Cabenuva. It's a single shot injection. If you know anything about it, repercussions, et cetera, et cetera. Appreciate it. Thank you.
All of the new HIV meds really go through tremendous studies to look at safety, you know, and efficacy, because that's really the important thing with HIV meds. So that particular medication, like others, approved by the FDA, went through long-term studies, and the answer is yes, you can choose that med, and I think you can choose it safely. And the advantage of this injection is that it's once a month. So you're not taking a pill every day, you're getting a monthly injection. And for some people, that works really, really well. So the answer is yes, you can take it. For the side effects, all drugs have side effects. Read about the side effects. Anything that's over 5%, a lot of them are like, you don't, if it's below 5%, it may not reach statistical significance. But if it's more than 5%, then it tends to reach statistical significant, which means significance, which means it may be more likely. But for many people, a monthly injection is a much better way to go.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. Okay, Zorba, we love when our listeners pop in to drop some knowledge or lend their expertise to the show. The following listener tip came from Suzanne in East Aurora, New York. Dear Dr. Zorba, I enjoy listening to you and Tom every week. Why and Tom? All I do is say 800-462-7413.
She loves it.
That's not that enjoyable.
It makes her feel really, really good every time you say that. It's the way you say it. You know what? It's musical. 1-800-4. I can't do it. I can't capture it.
I'm irreplaceable. All right. Anyway, I appreciate all the advice you give to your listeners.
Your advice or my advice?
Your advice. Okay. It's so uplifting to hear you laugh, and it certainly cheers me up. However, many times.
Why is there a however?
Here comes the. Okay.
That's right.
Many times you mention a medicine that I would like to write down, but I can't spell the word.
Oh,
please, for me and all those other listeners who can't spell, please spell the name of the medicine.
Well, I have spelling problems too, so I can't always do it. But sometimes I will. You could go to Siri on your phone, if you have a phone, just say, "Hey Siri, how do I spell this medicine?" I'll try to do a better job sometimes of spelling the medicine, but it pops into my mind, and believe me, when you have dyslexia, if I spell the medicine and it's wrong, then the spelling police are going to be after me.
Do you have a request to make this a better show? Just post it on our Facebook page.
I do. I've got a request. Go ahead.
Or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR-ORG. And, of course, if you go through Facebook, you can do that, too.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear another voicemail now, Zorba. This one from a Wisconsin listener.
I have a question about hair loss. I'm bipolar and taking lithium. I wonder if that is something that I lose hair to. Thank you.
Probably not. I mean, if you're female, it's different. But if you're male, 99% of all hair loss is male pattern balding. And I'd have to look in lithium, but to the best of my knowledge, hair loss is not one of the things that you need with lithium. So, and you need lithium. If you have bipolar and lithium works, you do not want to stop lithium. So I don't think hair loss, I don't have a PDR book exactly in front of me, but hair loss is certainly not a major issue with lithium, and the answer is it's an issue with genetics.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. And before we head out, Zorba, let's do the segment where we feature what our wonderful listeners are writing on the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page. This is called Facebook Feedback.
Facebook Feedback.
Okay, Zorba, we recently posted an old photo of me, probably from the 1980s, wearing a suit and holding a telephone. See?
You're showing, you know something? This is definitely the 1980s. The phone you have probably doesn't exist. Well, it probably exists in your house right now, but it's definitely dated, no doubt about it. But on the other hand, you look pretty hip, man. So, pretty hip for the 80s.
Let's do this in a hurry. Let's have you read some of the replies we got from our lovely Facebook followers.
Gotta love them. Okay. First up, Robert in St. Augustine, Florida wrote, "Wow, that's a push-button phone. Pretty progressive for Tom."
Okay, next up, Jack.
I read him. Next up, Jack wrote, "Somewhere there's a 70s game show missing his host." Yeah, you kind of do look like a game show host. That's it. You know, how about, you know, Wheel of Fortune? That would be good.
Can we end the show? No.
Connie wrote, "I once recall coming home in the wee hours of the morning after a night in the emergency room." She's in Madison, obviously. And there was Tom heading for work. So I knew it was early when I saw him. Right? Okay. How early did you go here?
I used to work really, 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 really.
Anyway, then there's Terry. No, we're not. Terry in Decatur, Illinois said, quote, "Tom was a real dapper fellow back then." Doesn't think you're dapper now, obviously. "Two, what a neat photo to have. My initial thought that he was a tall Billy Crystal doppelganger."
Thanks to our wonderful listeners for all the Facebook comments. And, of course, you can always send us an old-fashioned email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to stream the show online anytime, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org and, of course, on Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime to leave us your question at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Did you miss something on today's show? Simply go to ZorbaPastor.org to catch up on all things Zorba. There you will find recipes from the show, links to the Facebook page, Zorba's Healthy Living articles, and you can subscribe to the weekly podcast. On the web, that's ZorbaPastor.org.